Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly, which still carries his name in his honor. Although Brian left us over 2 years ago, we try to preserve Brian's roundtable format by adhering to his concept that less is more, more or less. Today, Truman O'Brien is guiding us from the Voice of Vachon Jean Bosch broadcast studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon, zooming in from their homes on Vachon, as opposed to their yachts. Our political luminary, Kevin Jones, and historian extraordinaire, Bruce Holman. I'm your host, Craig Bellis, and as I indicated, I'm sitting here in the pilot in command position today, next to my fellow airplane owner, crasher, and Zoom engineer, Truman O'Brien.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
Joining keep us aloft. Just keep us aloft.
There you go.
Joining us today via Zoom is Lennon, whose last name I did not double check beforehand on how to pronounce.
Bronsema.
Bronsema. Well, I was going to take a guess at Bronsema. I should have gone with it. Lennon Bronsema, who is from the Washington Conservation Voters, we will talk about and to him in just a moment.
Good morning.
But before we do that, thank you, and good morning to you, Lennon. Before we do that, we're going to check in with everybody just to see how you've been doing here for the last week in Vachon land. Kevin, what have you been up to?
Hey, I have to report that four of the members of the leadership team of the Vachon Climate Action Group spent three amazing days in the old growth forests of the Bogachiel River Valley on the Olympic Peninsula. And I have had the Bogachiel on my list for way too long. And we had a fantastic 30-mile adventure through the heartlands of some of the most amazing old growth forests that I've ever seen. Wow. And so, it's spectacular to be back on the rock, and I'm actually dying to get back out there again. But yeah, it's been a good week.
That sounds like a good week.
Quick question. You say it's on the Olympic Peninsula. Is it in the Olympic Range, or where is it?
It is the river drainage north of the Ho River drainage.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, cool. The Olympic National Park.
Cool. Kevin can't tell you that. That's a secret.
Yeah, I was going to say, he can tell me, but he'd have to kill me, right? Yeah, okay, right. I got it.
Well, that sounds fabulous. That's going to be a tough one to beat in terms of our past week. Bruce, what do you got?
Well, doesn't quite measure up to the Bogachiel, but I spent yesterday afternoon on the water with a group called MERT, the Marine Emergency Response Team.
Oh.
And not many people in Vachon are aware of it, but MERT, under the leadership of Jim Hauser, has contacted every waterfront community around Vachon, gotten contact people, given them signs to say they're okay or they need help. So in case of the big one and the island's cut off, the Marine Emergency Response Team will go visit every single community around the island and sort of just figure out what they need. Are they cut off? Do they need water? Do they need food? Do they need medical help? Whatever. So we staged a trial yesterday. And so I took my boat, Vachon, as sort of the home boat, if you will, and a small runabout to run into the beach. And we delivered supplies and sort of, we had a couple of ham operators on board. So we had VHF radio and ham radio. And just a sense of doing the trial to figure out how it works and would it work. And of course, yesterday was a beautiful day like today. The water was flat. So ideal conditions to sort of trial something like that. But it worked really well. And it's something I think is going to be publicized more, just in the sense that if we do have the big one, whether it's a tsunami or an earthquake or whatever, that these waterfront communities that are often connected by one single road, if that road goes out, They're isolated. So it was an interesting afternoon. Doesn't measure up to the Bogus Shield, but it was still great.
You know, I have a question for you. We talked about having an aviation element, and we tested the VHF radio out of our aircraft, and we didn't have a great deal of a success, and I think it may have been the position that we had the radio or something, but I think we really need to work on that with the CERT folks and get that developed. So
what we found with the boats is because you're often in close to the shore and the banks are high, the command center at the Vashon Fire District often cannot receive VHF radio, but ham works because it's up to satellites and back. Right. So interesting, but we're trying to work those details out. So in case of the real emergency.
Right.
That's great. I that's wonderful. I actually had not heard about that. And that's like the way we used to get around all of Puget Sound. No
exactly.
roads. But, you know, Truman and I are both members of CERT. Now I've heard of MERT. I guess we would be the pilots, so we would be PERT.
PERT. Well, that's better than A. ERT.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. But full disclosure, I am an airport commissioner here on the island, and we have talked about how very important our little municipal airport is in the event of the big one. We're going to be one of the transportation methods of getting on and off the island, as well as the boats, of course. So we think that's a very, very important part of the emergency.
Kevin?
Yeah, just want to chime in. You know, this week's Beachcomber has a story of basically a medical response in which I understand a ferry boat was commissioned to take a patient into Seattle. Mm-hmm. And it was so urgent that they couldn't wait to load the boat. This is, I think I have the story right. And of course, during a large earthquake, what we've learned through, and maybe many know this, is that the ferry service will not operate until the docks have been inspected if it's a very significant earthquake. Right. So you'd like to argue that, hey, those boats are out there, let's just continue on. But in fact, there may be a long period of time until those docks are inspected and put back into service.
Right. Right.
So the notion of many opportunities as we have, particularly for urgent medical, I think the PERT has got to be a going concern for us.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Truman, while you have the floor, what have you been up to the past week? Are you healing up slowly but surely?
I am slowly healing from my back surgery. I'm actually walking around today without my cane. I'm taking a big chance here, but I'm trying it anyway. And I still have a fair amount of pain when I walk, but I can do it. So, and I actually flew the airplane yesterday, which was great. And thank you for the help, by the way, getting the airplane out of the hangar. But I can do that without too much pain. So that's grand.
Good.
That's about it for me.
That's good. I watched that takeoff and landing. The plane looked good. The propeller looked good.
Particularly good.
The paint job on the tips.
I thought so. Yeah, I couldn't see it, of course, from my position. And I thought the takeoff was great. The landing,
you got in two or three landings in that one landing.
Yeah, I did.
Lennon. Have you been doing anything other than working with the Washington Conservation voters? Although I'm not going to cut you off if that's what the week has consisted of, go for it.
Well, I have been doing that, but also because I'm on the island, you know, I engage with the island. So I had a great opportunity to go up to the Vashon Food Bank. They had their annual celebration of community volunteers this last week, and it was really great having these island businesses donating food and drink to help make people, you know, feel great about the work they're doing there to help feed our island. I have children in school, and school started, as you all know. And so the entire family, except me so far, has what we have called the kinder cold.
Oh, yeah.
Just this wild cold that isn't really a cold, but it's enough to like throw you off. We got that going on. And, spending plenty of time with work. It's National Voter Registration Day. Last week was preparing for this day and this week of making sure we are getting people registered here in Washington, but, you know, throughout the country where the deadlines are looming. But
You know, that's interesting that you brought that to our attention here, that today is National Voter Registration Day. I think it was either yesterday evening or this morning, I got all of a sudden on my Facebook page, I got the question, you know, double check to see if you're registered. Yeah. And I immediately did. I just doubled, you know, filled in the blanks and immediately got my response that luckily, happily, I was registered and ready to go.
That's great.
That's really right up your, you know, in your bailiwick there.
Yes.
No question about it. I hope everybody in the family feels better.
I think they'll turn their corner.
Okay.
Yes.
Good. And me?
I was just going to say, we used to refer to my daughter as Typhoid Molly because she brought home everything the first 3 weeks of school. It was horrible.
But your immune system was just tough as
much
could
better,
be.
Much better, yeah.
That's been a problem with COVID and everybody, you know, having to hide out. Their immune systems have, I think, weakened to a certain degree. Yeah. My week has not been quite as charitable as some of yours in terms of your pursuits. I went to the Patsy Cline review at Dig, which I go to almost every time it comes on the island. Deborah Heesch brings it in one form or another. And that was, I mean, the entertainment on this island that is free is unbelievable. You know, and 5 minutes from your home, unless you live out on the tip of Maury Island. So that was enjoyable. And then the other thing I did was my friend who is sitting here next to me loaned me some passes, Alaska Airline discount standby passes, and went to the airport. And the airport, if you've seen the news lately, has been a zoo. The security lines go back out almost into the parking lot, or, you know, out into the street. We were flying. My wife and I were flying standby to Missoula, and we were the very last two seats that got on that airplane. We went back there to look at a little automobile which I purchased, being a bit of a collector. So then we drove it back, which was fun. Visited our friends in Spokane on the way back. Stayed at the Davenport, which has always been one of my favorite hotels. So that's what I've been doing.
So are you going to disclose what this little gem of a car is?
It's a 1975 BMW 2002.
And it is gorgeous. Gorgeous.
It's the predecessor to the M series that continued from then on out. So the little four banger, but it's fun. And just by the way, to lay your fears, Kevin, the long range plan here is to convert it to electricity.
I was just wondering if that's where you're headed with that. That's awesome.
It is. Those are popular automobiles to convert to electrical. So I'm looking at that down the road.
Maybe the Inflation Reduction Act can steer some incentive funds for you to make that transition. EV incentive program, you know,
nice.
Is up for defining now.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. Talk to you a minute about what happened on this day in history. Thanks to our esteemed historian Bruce Holman, we're informed that this is National Pepperoni Pizza Day.
As well, my favorite.
Everybody's, not everybody's, but it is the most popular pizza. And National String Cheese Day. Every time I hear about National Pepperoni Pizza Day, I think to myself, I used to tell my law students, not everyone is going to like you as a lawyer. What do you think you are, a pepperoni pizza?
There you go.
Also on this day, in 1973, Billie Jean King defeated Bobby Riggs in the famous Battle of the Sexes on the tennis court. 90 million people watched the match. This is also the day in 1946 when the first Cannes Film Festival was held. The winner, by the way, or one of the grand pre-award winners, was the movie The Lost Weekend, with Ray Milland and Jane Wyman. It's one of only three movies that won the Grand Prix at Cannes and an Academy Award for Best Picture of the year. The also, Wilbur Wright, another thing that happened today. Everybody knows Wilbur Wright, the bicycle maker, also the airplane maker. Wilbur Wright, whose brother Orville, the two of them are credited with inventing the first airplane, made a complete circle in 1 minute and 18 seconds. And Truman, pilots appreciate the fact I commented here, much faster than a standard rate turn.
Right.
A standard rate turn is
2 minutes
for a full 360.
That's right.
So the great joke that I saw is that immediately after that flight, they could not find their luggage.
Yeah.
You know, where they're searching, it was gone.
Yeah, it's probably that's right. True.
And finally for today, this is the day in 1378 when Cardinal Robert of Geneva is elected Pope Clement VII, beginning the papal schism with competing popes in Avignon, France, and Rome, Italy, from 1378 to 1417. What's that? That's only 39 years. I didn't realize that the schism was that short. It certainly is a major bit of history. But I could see why you'd be attracted to Avignon on the Côte de Rhône. I don't know about it in what the wine was like in 1378, but they were probably working on it then. But be that as it may, schisms, I thought, was a great segue to today's topic, the November elections that are coming up. Because we do have a fair bifurcation in this country that we witness in the news every day. And that's why we have Lenin Bronsema.
Yeah, correct.
Yes, I'm getting on my Zoom screen here, I'm getting a yes, that is correct, yes. Washington Conservation Voters Chief Campaign Officer. The November election will definitely have a marked influence on our lives and the lives of our fellow Americans. It seems like all the recent elections are becoming more significant. The Washington Conservation Voters advocate for environmental progress and justice through actions that mobilize the public, elect champions for the environment, and hold our leaders accountable. Lenin is the WCV Chief Campaign Officer. Let's give a warm, briefly welcome to fellow Islander Lenin Bronsema.
Yes, welcome, welcome.
Yeah.
Thank
we needed
you.
To have the sound
thank
effects. You. I should have queued that up.
Yeah, I could have done
that's right.
I could have done that.
That's a new trend for us.
That's right. Yeah. Well, we've got all these sound effects here. We could have done that.
We could do that.
Yeah, we've abandoned them.
We have.
Let's get started by asking just a basic question. What is the Washington Conservation Voters? What is the mission, Lenin?
You mentioned in the intro, it truly is just to advocate for environmental progress by mobilizing the public, electing champions to office, both at the state and local levels, and most importantly, hold them accountable when they are not living up to what the citizens of Washington want.
When you say champions, just to get a little definition, champions is kind of a term of art in your organization, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's a great way to put it.
Yeah,
it's a term of art, but it is, I think, pretty easily, when you see it, you know what a champion is. There's obviously lots of different legislation passes through various chambers of government, but when you have a champion, they're the person who's there from the beginning, making sure things aren't getting left out, things aren't lost at the bargaining table. And when they aren't fully realized, they stand with you to say, we got to do better. We got to do more.
And the organization actually recognizes individuals as champions?
Yeah, we have a legislator of the year. Every year at our annual event, which is in October this year, October 14th, where you can learn this year's champion. But yes, every year there's a champion. And then we have a scorecard where we grade every sitting legislature in at the state level on how they're doing. And I think you can consider folks, 90 plus and getting an A, those can be the champions.
Right. Yeah. Truman?
Yeah, I just, my question is, do you, I would assume that you also review all of upcoming legislation to see if it meets your criteria and supports that or not as it comes up.
Yeah, we have a robust policy team that watches as bills drop and understand what the implications are. A lot of it is sneaky stuff where people, you know, members of the Republican caucus mostly put in things that sound nice, but the implications are very bad for the state. Things that would like remove checking if environmental standards are met before siting an energy facility, or should, or is there a wetland before putting in a road, you know, but make it sound nice. But as we go into a legislative session, we have the environmental community comes together around a shared table called the Environmental Priorities Coalition. And we choose three or four issues or bills, pieces of legislation that we really think are critical to be passed that session. And those are the main ones we advocate for.
Bruce, did you want to chime in?
Yeah, I just had a question about is there a national conservation voters organization? And is there a local organization in every state? I mean, how does it work on the national level?
Yeah, there's an organization called the League of Conservation Voters, and they do the similar work to us at the national level. They are connected. We're connected to them through a system called the Conservation Voter Movement. And there's 34 state chapters who advocate for environmental progress at their state levels. It's a loose network. I don't know like the historical connection, but I'd say it's more of a like the United States, where every league is sort of its own entity, and what works in Washington State is going to be different than what's working in like the state of Tennessee. And so approaching the issues and meeting people where they're at to make progress instead of just a blanket policy.
So, but are there guidelines or anything that you use to follow, or are you kind of on your own to develop?
No, we have a shared agenda. I mean, the main crisis facing us all is the climate crisis. And the federal level, where we, you know, just got the Inflation Reduction Act passed, which silly name is really the climate bill. It's going to bring all kinds of new energy to making us more efficient, saving energy, saving dollars. But at the state level, that means states have to pitch in to get to those goals. So all the states are pushing for 100% clean energy by 2030, having a plan in place to get rid of all dirty fossil fuel energy producing facilities, such as like the big ones right now are natural gas plants, phasing those out by 2040 and replacing those instead of just buying clean energy credits, you know, on the market to get to those zero emission goals. And then as so like that's one example of a shared priority across all the states where we're trying to line up. And the great thing about it is once you get enough states on board, the national legislation is inevitable because all the states are already there. It's not the federal government mandating something all of a sudden. It's like federal government catching up with the states. And Washington State's been a great leader in passing legislation that other states can pick up and tweak to fix, work with them, their states, and then move forward.
Bruce?
Yeah, I had a question about, I mean, some environmental, most environmental issues cross state boundaries, you know, particularly, you know, the Columbia River, Snake River issues about agriculture in eastern Washington, eastern Oregon, Idaho. How do you work or do you work with Oregon and Idaho, or do they even have conservation organizations like yours?
They do, yes. Oregon and Idaho both do. In the Northwest, we have a chapter in Alaska, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, Nevada, and the West, we can call. It keeps going west, but our nearest partners. On things like the Snake River system, and the dams there. We approach it with an eye towards those most impacted, and the ones most impacted by the damming of that river have been the tribes, whose treaties clearly stated that they could be able to fish, and there's no fish. The dams have moved them to almost an extinction event, and so the dams have to come out for those treaties to be honored. Another point, you know, they're old, right? Those dams are nearing end of life, need to be replaced anyhow. We have the technology now to do it in a more sustainable manner for the fish and wildlife and the river basins, and we just have to do that.
So my question is, you would not, I mean, it sounds like you're modifying the dams rather than just eliminating them. Is that correct? Or are you trying to eliminate them and then put in a new system that would still function like the dams?
Yeah, the Murray Inslee report that came out last month made it clear the only solution to restore the salmon runs is to remove the dams. So the dams have to come out to make sure salmon are restored. And there's the race is on, if you will, to engineer how we still get the water to the fields that need it in the farming communities, how we move the stuff that's been barged, even though it's being barged less and less, where to rail and truck impact that. And then to bring this back to elections a little bit, public utility districts that receive this power from the dams, those are elected positions, and it's their job to help make those communities' energy more efficient, to make it more sustainable and longer lasting. And so they can use their legislative power as a utility commission to make sure they're bringing on more sustainable in the sense of not harming the environment, physical environment. So out there in Eastern Washington, you know, solar makes a great option. You know, the wind is pretty powerful out there. And so figuring out ways to meet the energy demands with the new technology.
The question I had too was, I was out in Walla Walla not too long ago and speaking with a local gentleman there. He was not real pro the wind turbines. I guess there are a number of them have gone up, and he felt like they really weren't performing up to the level that they were promised. And I'm just curious if you have any comments about that, about the wind turbines and how well they're doing.
I don't know that gentleman's specific issues with the wind turbines, but the overall, they are a great way to produce power. Texas has the largest wind farms in the country and is exporting, you know, can export most of that power. And it's a good way to generate power. I'm excited about future, you know, or I guess it's current technology, but, you know, this offshore power where you can use tidal energy, siting the wind turbines further out where they're doing in Norway and in the Norwegian countries up there. You know, the technology is out there, and I think it is a change. And I think probably a lot of people have as they see them go up, similar reaction to when people who lived around where the dams are saw them go in.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, that's a dramatic change.
You know, one of the things I read about not too long ago was the possibility of doing tidal energy production in the Narrows bridge area. And I'm wondering if you know anything about that. I think that would be fascinating.
That would be really exciting. I know they're doing the study research in there. I mean, the tidal power through the Narrows is incredibly strong. Mm-hmm. I think there is some questions still to be answered on where that energy is, the physical piece of, you know, the power generating part is located and how that impacts anything that's already there. Mm-hmm. But yes, the ideal place to put tidal power is where there's strong tides.
You got us going.
It's great stuff. It's an exciting topic.
We started diving deep. in many respects here right off the bat. I want to digress for just a minute and ask you, Lennon, you're the chief campaign officer at Washington Conservation Voters. What is your responsibility there? Obviously, you know a lot about a lot.
Yes. my role is to make sure we are operating all of our campaigns. We have many campaigns running concurrently to make sure that they're complementing each other and being run as efficiently as possible. There's political campaigns, like what you probably think of as normal campaign work, right? Like, let's elect someone. Those campaigns, how do those campaigns complement work we're doing at the policy level? Like, we're going around the state, local jurisdictions are implementing the Climate and Clean Energy Act and submitting comments to the state on how that is done. We want the state policy to be as robust as possible. So are we elevating those kinds of issues to the candidates who are running? Doing the education, just making sure all those pieces line up across the campaign so that we're not either duplicating work or leaving an opportunity unturned.
You know, you've told us in this short period of time about a lot of the things that you're doing, your organization is doing, the Washington Conservation Voters. And we on Vashon have a couple of champions representing us. Representative Fitzgibbon and Senator, how does he pronounce his name?
Wynn.
Senator Wynn.
That's right, Wynn. Since it appears that we're fairly well covered with champions, where could our listeners apply their time and energy to expand the election of environmental champions? What can they do for you and for themselves in the environmental area?
Yeah, that. Thanks for that question. Well, these are the first elections we get to do since we've redistricted. So the annual redistricting process happens once a decade. Concluded this past winter, I guess, January of 2022. So these across the state, every elected official is running in a somewhat changed district. Our district got changed a little bit, but there are voters here that both Fitzgibbon and Senator Wynn have not, had to represent before. So it's important if, when you check your voter registration, it shows you what district you live in, that you call your legislator and let them know what issues are important to you. And for us, the environmental ones, the environmental champion, it's easy to get us pigeonholed into like, you're the save the trees people, or you're just go recycle more, right? And if you think of it in a broader frame, it really comes out to public health, right? Our environment is important. You can see lead pipes in Flint, or the crazy water crisis down in what was that, the state capital down there, Mississippi, or
Montgomery.
If you think of broader into public health, every elected official should be putting environment at the top of their card. But if you want to really get into electoral aspect, you want to spend some time helping elect someone this year, the state Senate race in Whatcom County up in the 42nd, supporting Sharon Shoemake, who's running for the Senate in an open seat, would add an environmental seat to the Senate overall, and that helps to aid in the majority of making sure we can push for bold action. And then down in a little closer to home, the 47th legislative district, which is like Auburn area, former Senator Claudia Kaufman, she's running again to be state senator again in the newly reshaped 47th district. She'd be one of the few Native women elected to office around the country and here in our state, and she's got a bit of a fight on her hand, so that's a good one to look at. For the southern neighbors of our island, the Pierce County Council, not that they get a vote in it, but it's real close to them. Pierce County Council has a couple competitive seats that are important because the counties, there's a lot of focus on state races always, but counties have a huge role in implementing and carrying out policies that really impact the people that live there. So county elections are important as well.
You know, obviously, your organization is interested in environmental and conservation issues. Are you also interested in issues of election integrity? We've got a lot of talk about that in many, many states as to what's good and what's bad for election integrity. Is there anything in Washington currently that the organization is focused on in that sphere?
Yes, absolutely. The state of our democracy should be of the utmost concern to anyone that here in the, especially, you know, here on Vashon, but, you know, across the country. In Washington, county auditors run elections, and everywhere except King County, where we have a King County elections officer. Auditors are up for election this year. In Spokane, the current auditor, Vicki Dalton, is running against a gentleman who is openly thinks the elections have been stolen in the past. The voting doesn't count all the time. So it's important, like, we keep people who believe in the principles of democracy as our auditors. And then there's ballot measures around the state that also have an impact on voting. And so in both Clark County and the city of Seattle, there's ranked choice voting, which is letting people choose, make more than one choice while they're voting. They can choose their top four candidates or top five, however many candidates there are, ranking who they like best to worst. And that is a more fair way of choosing people than just our current system, just the top two, where you are sometimes picking the person you just don't like
less
as bad as the other person, right?
Lesser of two evils, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And so ranked choice voting, that's a great development, and we see that happening in Clark and Seattle. But in King County, we also get a vote. There'll be a measure on all of our ballots this year to move elections to even years for county offices. So in odd years, voter turnout goes way down. It can be as low as like 30%. And that's when we elect people like our King County council members and the King County executive. The question on the ballot will be, should we move that to even years, like presidential years, and to have higher turnout? And we think, yes, well, that would be a great move, because increased turnout means better, more people's voices being heard.
Truman? Did you have a comment?
Yeah, I'm going to kind of diverge a little bit. I want to know about funding for your organization. Do you folks do you fundraise, or how are you supported?
Yeah, we most of our funding for Washington Conservation Voters comes from individuals, and we have events, you know, where people give. We have recurring donors. We do get a number of grants to support work, both from our national partner, League of Conservation Voters, as well as other foundations in Washington that are interested in conservation type work and democracy work. There are not enough entities out there working to protect democracy and expand access to the ballot. So we're able to get some of those funds as well. And then on the elections itself, when we're like actually advocating for vote for Sharon Shoemake, that is all through individual donors. And you can see all of those through our state's public disclosure site, pdc.wa.gov, to see who is funding us and the opposition.
By the way, your website is first class.
Thank you.
Yeah, you go to Washington Conservation Voters, put that in your search engine, and bam, it'll come right up, and it's a beautiful website, easily navigated and very interesting and informative. Let me ask you about
the Secretary of State race. Do you have any position on that? Because we have former Senator Steve Hobbs, who was appointed to the position following the prior Secretary of State taking a role in the Biden administration. Any thoughts on that race?
Conservation Voters has not taken a position on that race. Either candidate will, I think, fulfill the duties of the Secretary of State. I think the interesting thing about the race this year is because of our top two primary system, there is no Republican on the ballot. You can choose from Steve Hobbs, the Democrat, or Julie Anderson, the Independent. And I think it's important for voters to really research their candidates and hold whoever is Secretary of State accountable to the principles that we valued here in Washington. We had a Republican Secretary of State for 40 odd years. And in that time, we have made the greatest progress on voting rights, probably anywhere in the nation. We have mail-in ballots, postage paid ballots. You can same day voter registration. You can do most of your voting information online. And so that only came about because the state legislature pushed that legislation through. And then it's up to the Secretary of State to implement it. Both of the candidates, I feel great that they will fulfill the letter of the law and make sure our elections are valid.
And what about that characterization that people identify themselves as independents? Do you have any concern over that, that self-designation, or are you just sort of encouraging individuals to do their research and be careful?
I don't have concern over the designation. Julie was the auditor in Pierce County for, I think, 8, maybe 12 years, has a track record of running elections. And I think voters can look at that and see if they were happy with the outcome there. The only real difference would be if the state party itself, through their party convention apparatus, was to put forward some very specific items they'd like the Secretary of State to carry out. I guess you have potential there then for an auditor who aligns as a Democrat to feel like they should follow that. But again, the role of auditor is to carry out the law of elections, amongst their other stuff that they do, right? Manage the state's corporations, and they have a lot of other work. And I don't think it's not like the scenario of an other states where you have an election denier running to become Secretary of State. We have great people wanting to be our auditor. Kevin.
Yeah, I was thinking I appreciate you bringing up the national scene, because it just kind of leaves people with a lot of questions, I think, along the lines. The only thing that Lennon, this is not your position, this is clearly mine, but I'll just express my opinion here, that I really do like the notion that the Democratic Party is emerging as the party that really is actively working to protect the vote and make sure the votes are counted, and the winner, the one who gets the most votes, actually gets the seat. And Hobbs has the advantage of an entire Democratic caucus behind him, to help him make sure that those outcomes are hopefully aligned with our values. So I'll put my opinion out there, but thanks for the opportunity to insert one consideration. I think they're probably in people's minds.
Bruce, you had a comment.
Yeah, it's historically, to me, it's very interesting that when a major political party begins to fracture, which is what we're seeing with the Republican Party, you begin to see the emergence of what will emerge as potentially a third party and then ultimately become a major dominant party. And independents are an important stage in that process. And so what you're seeing, not only here in Washington, but in a number of places, are people who are running as independents because they don't want to run as MAGA Republicans, but they don't also want to run as Democrats. And so there's an interesting sort of transition phase that we're in right now, And it depends on what happens with the Republican Party. But if it fractures along the lines that it seems to be fracturing, you're going to have a minority party that's very MAGA Republican. You're going to have another minority party that's the traditional Republicans who are going to have to find a home. And they may not be comfortable in the Democratic Party, but they're not comfortable in the MAGA Republican Party. And so what will emerge ultimately is probably a third party that will ultimately replace the MAGA Republican Party and become a new sort of Republican or whatever name they choose. So it's an interesting process, and it's happened a number of times in the American past.
Before I comment, Kevin,
I just wanted to say the views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the board, staff, or underwriters and donors of Voice of Vashon. As an organization, Voice of Vashon does not take political positions. We do support our show's hosts and their guests in expressing their views as long as they are not obscene or hate-mongering. Thank you for listening. Kevin, you may proceed.
Thank you for amplifying our disclosure statement. I just wanted to say that the point Bruce is making, I think going back to what Lennon talked about with ranked choice voting earlier, people might say, oh yeah, you know, that's another way to do it. But perhaps that is a key to helping us transition into a new set of representation options.
Are there other counties or areas that are thinking about this, the rank order? I know Alaska, the state of Alaska is doing it, but.
Yeah, I mean, the largest jurisdiction is the city of New York that does ranked choice voting. It was implemented in 2020, I believe. If New York can handle it, really any jurisdiction can handle it. There has been a bill in the state legislature for the last 2 or 3 years to have it be implemented at the state level. Another reason county auditor elections are important. The county auditors are very persuasive in what kind of form of voting we have. And we've been working to get more and more auditors on board with implementing ranked choice around the state.
Yeah, there is a organization, Fair Vote Washington, that supports ranked choice voting in Washington State. So if you're interested in learning more about it, and I've worked a lot with it in Australia and New Zealand and teaching students how that system works versus our system. And students walk away thinking, wow, why don't we do that? So it's an interesting process, but Fair Vote Washington is a great place to learn more about ranked choice voting.
That's ranked choice voting is something that most people, I think, do not quite understand. Mm-hmm. I personally am an advocate of the Doges. For those of you who are somewhat familiar, you have neutral individuals who pick other neutrals that pick other neutrals who then pick the actual legislators and offices. I say that tongue in cheek. Hey, on that, I think it's time to probably wrap up this section of small talk. And Len and I thank you very much for being with us. Is there anything else, any thoughts you want to leave us with?
I think if people do want to get involved through our organization in this year's elections, there's a nice, they can either go to our main website or they can go to evergreenfuture.org. That's evergreenfuture.org and sign up for some volunteer shifts and get involved. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, and please stick around for the remaining 13 minutes if you can.
Absolutely.
Because we touch upon some interesting topics that we like to kibitz about the briefly.
Terrific.
Thank you very, very much. We have a number of potential topics. We could talk about the West Seattle Bridge.
Cheers.
We could talk about a couple of organizations or airlines that want to reduce the number of hours to 750 hours to put a person in the pilot's position on a commercial jet, which the FAA actually just rejected.
Yeah, I can see why.
There's a number of other things we could talk about, but the one that grabs my attention and has grabbed the news' attention recently is this: a few southern governors who've taken to sending asylum seekers to places like the
vice president's residence in Washington, D.C., and to the Isle of Martha's Vineyard. Is Vashon next in line? Any thoughts?
Thank goodness we don't have a big airport.
I was going to say, yeah, although, you know, we could bring over boats.
Yeah.
Thoughts on that whole procedure, if you will?
It's an interesting, many people don't know, but the same tactic was tried in the 1960s by the White Citizens Councils, which name wouldn't fly in these days, in these times, thank goodness. But White Citizens Councils in the South created what they called reverse freedom rides. And if you're familiar with freedom rides, they were bus trips by activists through the South, voter registration, sort of opposing segregation laws and those kinds of things in the South. So the White Citizens Councils, which were sort of an offshoot of the Ku Klux Klan, you know, dressed up a little bit, not in white hoods, but in suits and ties, sort of recruited African Americans to ship north. And essentially, you know, what you see right now is those Southern governors, particularly Abbott and Florida,
Ron DeSantis.
Yeah, DeSantis. Yeah, are basically going back to the racist playbooks of the 1960s and beyond. And it's outrageous, I think.
I'll agree. I think the state attorney generals can look into the illegality of them spending state dollars to send people out of their state for no real reason other than political PR. I think will backfire as the communities they're sending to are rallying around, you know, as you would, because generally people are good and good neighbors are going to help these folks out and see that we can take care of many more. It's really despicable.
Kevin.
I was happy to see the headlines from Texas that those investigations there are starting. So interesting to see what happens there.
Well, if DeSantis would have sent the people from Florida, for crying out loud, but to send people from Texas and then stop in Florida, get fuel and go to Martha's Vineyard, what was he thinking? You know, I mean, it's just asinine.
Well, it's treating individuals like chattel,
well, yeah.
And not like human beings,
yeah.
Who are legally in the country.
Right.
So I think a really good case could be made out for kidnapping,
yeah.
Or the civil case for false imprisonment.
Right.
What's fascinating too is in 1962, as these African American reverse freedom riders were sent north with promises of jobs and housing. I mean, you know, it's just a replay of what happened, you know, 70 years ago. And what happened is those people arrived to say same thing that happened on Martha's Vineyard. People stepped up, they found them housing. And in fact, the Hyannis Port group ended up at the same military installation that the Martha Vineyard group ended up at. So, I mean, history doesn't repeat itself, but it certainly rhymes a lot.
I think the solution is to send banned books to Florida.
There you go.
I think I read that disclaimer again for my benefit, not for yours, Kevin, or anyone else.
We're all in this together.
That's right. How much time we got left, Truman?
Oh, about six, about five six, minutes. Yeah,
about 5 minutes. I'm curious about the so-called dark Brandon effect. I don't know if people are familiar with that expression, The dark Brandon effect is sort of the flip side of another expression, and it speaks to the power that President Biden is having with regards to legislation and surging popularity right now. How do you think the dark Brandon effect will be affecting the November elections?
Did any of you see Joe Biden on the premiere of 60 Minutes on Sunday? I was pretty darned impressed. He he came across very sharp, very to the point. I thought it was really interesting when he was asked if he was going to run in 24. He said, well, I haven't quite made that decision yet. I'm going, yeah, right. You've made that decision, pal. You're just not ready to tell the folks. But Kevin.
You know, I think there's more to the Biden story. I mean, he's a lifetime civil servant serving our government and knows lots of paths to achieve things. When he became the apparent, you know, a nominee, Indivisible Vashon went with the We Heart Joe logo. And because, of course, people were uncertain, right, about whether he could accomplish things. And this whole notion of getting along, it seemed really foreign to our country, right? He's like, that's not us anymore. But look at what's happened. You know, that's awesome. There's a lot of really great legislative successes, as we now all know. And I think that's now in the hip pocket, and he's pivoting to let's really make sure that our democracy prevails so we can have more of this. One of the things, Craig, that you teed up in the pre-show notes was, you know, legislative successes and things that might affect the November Senate and congressional elections. And I just want to say, you know, our friend Stephen Cox, who was on Small Talk a few weeks ago, the Washington State Indivisible podcast, Stephen and I teamed up to do our latest elections update. And 9 o'clock tonight, Voice of Vashon on the Progressive Vashon podcast. Tune in. You can hear some about 45 minutes of detail on how those things kind of might fit together. So room for optimism.
And that's when and where again that we can hear that?
That is on Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, and 9 o'clock tonight. And oh, by the way, in the happenings section of the Beachcomber, we're now starting to make sure people can go right there at the front page below the fold and see what's next for Small Talk. For the Progressive Vashon podcast, 9 o'clock tonight, Stephen Cox and I talking about the November election. Tune in and hear the latest.
Okay. With 2 minutes left? 2 minutes left. What's the future of the British monarchy and King Charles? in 10 words or less. Maybe a few more.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, you look at, the closest parallel to Elizabeth II is Victoria. A whole era becomes named after her. And you look at where Britain was in the 1820s when she came to the throne, where it was in the late 1890s when she died. And what you had is a series of kings following her who were not particularly distinguished, one of whom even stepped down from the crown. You know, Elizabeth, when Elizabeth took the throne in 52, Britain had emerged battered and beaten, but it was an empire. And today, you know, it's a third world power, if you will. What future kings will do, I think it's going to be a tough ride for them, and particularly as unpopular as Charles is. Although he's done a magnificent job sort of mending fences.
The Brits and the world do seem to love the pageantry and the monarchy, at least right now. And, of course, Charles is and has a reputation for being quite the conservationist. He's not late to the game.
Right.
And
nobody does pageantry better than the Brits.
Kidding. Kevin?
Well, after reading the first two volumes, Churchill's History of the English-Speaking World, where he recounted in great detail all the jockeying for position of who became the next king, no heads rolled here. there were a few moves being made about, who's now the Prince of Wales, so we can see some of that happening, but I would say a peaceful transition of royalty is probably a blessing for the Brits right now.
Yeah, I think so too. Hey, I want to thank all of you for Lennon, Kevin, Truman, Bruce. I am Craig Bellis, inviting you to join us in a week for the next edition of the Brown Briefly, when the Small Talk guests will be Emily Scott of the Vashon Food Bank. Thank you all.
Good night.
Bye now.